welcome to everyone, including some new faces. Glad to see everybody tonight. This is a new venue for us here at the Richard Howe House. It's a beautiful facility. I had not been aware of the extent to which it had been renovated on the inside and some of the beautiful work that was done to integrate the original part of the house with the additions. I hope you get a chance on your way out, if you haven't already done so, to see what was done to put this together. Certainly bears consideration to meet again here in future meetings. So I'll call the meeting to order, and if you haven't done so, please take a few moments to look at the minutes of our August 11th meeting, which now seems to be in the distant past. But nonetheless, if you would take a look at the minutes that are included as Attachment 2A in your packets, we'll be glad to take a motion for the minutes of the meeting.
That was a long time ago. Mm-hmm. One comment on the house there I'd like to add, if I may. I finally understood everything when I stopped in here for a visit on a canal project that I was working on in my environmental history class. This main house was over in what is now the, what do they call the complex over there? The Czar Nightclub Lodging?
22
East Exchange or something. And I remembered seeing the house up on supports and getting ready to move. It wasn't actually here in town to see it going down the road, but I remember from a historical preservation point of view, I was glad to see that. And then once this place was completely done, for whatever reason, I finally get over on this side of town, and they had to explain, oh, this is the house that was over at 20. Oh, then I finally put it all together. And then tie in with the canal, the house was owned by the original Ohio and Erie Canal engineer, who was the name of Mr. Howe.
Okay, do we have any motions on the minutes?
Motion.
Okay. We have a motion from Mr. Baker.
Nice.
And a second from Mr. Kish to approve the minutes as submitted. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor of accepting the minutes of the August 11th, 2011 meeting as submitted, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. We'll move on to the next item on the agenda, which is the technical progress report that will also include a report on the sub-allocated funds. Now, this was also included in your packet and includes the some important information about the proposed change in carryover funds on projects from one year to the next. So ODOT is looking seriously at changing a policy which would draw back dollars that are not utilized in current year projects. And I'll turn the floor over to Curtis so that we can hear more on this important topic as well as the actual reports.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Rondecker. First, administratively, I just want everybody to take note. The 2012 calendar has been provided in this mail out. As you'll see, I believe we're meeting 6 times next year. One of the things that Mike mentioned, I think we haven't booked the rooms yet because I think we wanted to see how this went, but the staff's very open to the possibility of having all the meetings here or having some of the meetings here and some of the meetings in Silver Lake. Or in potentially other places. If there's any discussion on that later, that would be great. So that's kind of the administrative. But moving on, if we start with the sub-allocated funds, the big issue that we're dealing with is the fact that every MPO, there are 17 MPOs in Ohio, Akron Metropolitan Area Transportation Study, which is us, is just one of them. And of all the MPOs, there's over $160 million that's carried over from year to year by all the MPOs collectively. And what the state of Ohio and the Department of Transportation has looked at, they're saying that's $160 million that's being continually carried over every year that's not being invested. And what we'd like to do in the grand scheme of things is take that $160 million and spend it on something. Now, the MPOs come back and say, well, it's a lot more complicated than that. And obviously, projects take a long time. Projects, you know, an environmental document takes longer than expected. Projects get pushed out. And so what the MPOs have been saying throughout this is like, hey, there's a lot of reasons that this happens. And even though it shows that we've got this balance, all this money is accounted for. And so there's been kind of this back and forth, give or take. And I think, you know, finally ODOT is kind of, in a way, calling the MPO's bluff and saying, like, well, if, you know, we think it's time you do something about this. Now, the policy that's mentioned in this proposal has not been approved by ODOT. Director Jerry Ray has not signed off on this. We were told through some of our other staff at ODOT that this was kind of in the works. And the idea is that if you look at, actually, I don't know if we have it in the packets, though. Actual list of funds. I don't know if that's in here or not. The Excel table.
Funding program and balance.
Yeah, that's the one. So if you look out at this, like as an example, what ODOT sees is they look out to fiscal year 2015, and if you see the balance at the bottom, they see $11 million balance that's being, you know, that they think is unaccounted for. Now, partially, like, part of this is projects haven't all been put in our program, but basically they see that number and that's what draws the red flag. And so what they wanted to do is create some kind of policy that would say MPOs are required every year to maintain very small balances, and the threshold they want to do is 25%. So if you carry over more than 25% of your annual allocation, ODOT's going to take whatever you carry over more than that 25%. And I think, and quite honestly, from our staff policy, we're not necessarily opposed to that policy from the standpoint that we feel like we need to do a better job of delivering projects. And in a perfect world, one of the things that we're going to try to do is over-program more so that we don't get to the point where we show these large carryover balances. So I think, you know, we brought it up to our policy committee because we wanted them to know really the reasons why, as we're selecting more projects, we're actually selecting more projects to construct than we do in a normal period of time, because what we want to do is bring more projects into the fold so that if a few projects drop out, there will be others that could potentially fill their spot, and we'll use all the money in this region and not send any back to ODOT. I apologize because I know that's a little bit wonky. This is all these details, but it's sort of a complicated issue. And so what we're hoping to do, like the staff's policy has been, we're going to start over-programming our budget, putting more projects on the books kind of as a safety net that if some projects do drop out, do they get canceled or whatever, we'll still have projects in the pipeline that we can give money to and spend the money here. I don't know if I did a great job of explaining that. Does anybody have any questions about that before I move on?
Would you call that like a revolving balance? It's just not—it's not really the same money. It's new money that
comes
in every year, and there just happens to be statistically amount left over.
The other thing is that there's only so many dollars to go around, and with new projects more or less interjected into the process, what happens if they all come to fruition?
Well,
what happens to the budgeted money? I mean, there won't be enough.
Well, and that's the downside to over-programming, and what our response is like we said, we're a very small part. Like I mentioned that there was $160 million statewide by the MPOs.
Collier County's got to be the bulk of it.
I'm not going to make a comment on that. There's actually a lot of truth. NOAACA, our sister agency, tends to do things a little bit differently, so they do show larger balances. But what MPOs are allowed to do is they're always allowed to trade funds with other state or with other state MPOs. So if we got in some kind of bind and we were, say, $1 million short for all these projects to be constructed, we would potentially find an MPO that's carrying a balance and say, would you like to do a trade? We'll trade you to get our money now, and you can have some of our money in the out year. And it's basically paper trading, but it would allow us to do all the projects. And I think from our perspective, what we want to do is get the most projects on the street as fast as possible. And so that's the goal. And so I think what we're going to continue to do and what you're going to hopefully see on this balance sheet is these numbers and the balances starting to shrink. And our goal is to have carryover balances that are less than 10% of our annual allocation.
Well, under what you'd be doing, Curtis, let's just say the example in front of us, the sheet we have in front of us right now. It's, by the way, that's attachment 3C. If you want to leaf through your papers, that's what we're talking about, is the summation of figures and balances. That $11 million, hypothetically, and actually there is an $8.8 million label carryover balance on that report. What would that become? I mean, are we talking it would be cut in half, or what?
Well, you would say that if we looked at it right now, our annual allocation, because this program, I think the idea was it would be starting in 2015. Our annual allocation is about $17 million. Our balance was $11 million. They would only let us carry over 25% of the $17 million. So we'd be allowed to carry over $4 million, or roughly, and ODOT would take back $7 million. To us, and I think this is just true of all government agencies, like it's a reason, we want to put as much money on the street as possible. So there's no harm in AMATS trying to get these balances down. In fact, it'll help, time value of money. The sooner we spend it, the better bang for the buck we get. So,
Does in the projects that you list or that you allocate on an annual basis, I assume that there is a not just about allocation schedule of when each project is going to happen based on some projections. I'm assuming that there's also a priority objective put against these projects also? And if not, wouldn't it make some sense to maybe implement a priority schedule so that if you ever did run into the situation where you ran into an what I would call overbooking to your budget, that then the rule would basically be is that whatever is at the bottom begins to get chipped off and falls into next year's budget.
Yeah, and we have the way it works right now is that when you get selected for AMATS funding, congratulations. We all meet with ODOT and we meet with the local community. AMATS and ODOT meet, and what they do at that time is they set an entire schedule for that project, and they say, basically, this is when the project's going to be delivered. What happens, though, is that the MPO, or AMATS in this case, if the project slips right now, there's no tool to say, to slap your hand and say, bad, it's kind of like we'll get, oh, sorry, the project slipped. And, then at that point, they've already put in a lot of money, so you're not going to pull the project.
All right.
So I think one of the issues has been that, there's no stick in order to get people to make sure, even after we set these timelines, to make sure that they follow them. And then the other thing that we've been discussing, though, is creating almost what we're calling reservoir projects, which the idea is that if you get selected for funding, we want you to work on the project. You're going to get funded at some point, but we're not going to guarantee you that it's funded in 2015. It might get funded in 2016, depending on how it all works out. And as we've been talking internally and externally with some of the city engineers, is that they're okay with that. When they get an environmental document, it lasts for 3 years. Obviously, everyone wants to get their project done, and political motivations will always weigh. But what we're hearing from a lot of the engineering staff is that that's okay. Like, we'd rather, as long as we know we're going to get the funding, if it happens in the fourth quarter of this year or the second quarter of the next year, we're comfortable with that. And so I think in a way there's a lot of kind of learning going on from our locals and the staff of what they can expect from us when they get funded for a project. And I think the idea moving forward is that they're not going to, that they're going to expect that, hey, if we over-program, you might have to wait an extra quarter to put your project under construction. And I think everyone's comfortable with that idea because they all feel, Mike, kind of like what you've echoed, is that they all want to make sure that the money is here. And so if that means that somebody has to wait a quarter or two to construct, they're willing to do that to ensure that the, whatever balance we have is being spent in Akron. and the greater Akron area.
Okay. Mr. Fowler, does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay. The only other thing I would comment is that, you know, this is a pretty drastic cutback from 100% to 25%. What about a sliding situation where we go to 80 to 60 to 40?
That's actually the plan.
Some people get used to it.
It wasn't articulated. You know, when Victor puts this memo together, the intent wasn't to focus on that. But I think that what we've heard is that it would start out at 75%, then 50%, and then 25%. So they would roll it over 3 years.
I'm just seeing half-built roads, half-completed things, and all of a sudden this carryover money is sucked back out of the process.
And I think in reality, the only, like, the way that we've, ODOT kind of does this every once in a while, and I think the reality is that the local communities, you know, local is still king, and if that would happen and you know, the mayors start calling the state, that it would probably be a potential bloodbath, but I don't think we're at that point yet in level of concern.
Okay. Anything else as far as the technical progress?
Actually, and I apologize, so I'll probably take a little longer than usual. The big thing that I don't know if anyone's been paying attention to, we definitely do, is the reauthorization of the highway bill. We're currently functioning under a bill that was approved, I believe, in 06. And it's expired, and we continue to be getting these continuing resolutions that allow MPOs and basically the whole federal transportation infrastructure system to continue. And what's happened is that we're at a point now where, you know, everyone gets paid, taxed 19 cents a gallon for tax. That goes to the federal coffers. That money's spent on roads. And we're getting to the point now where the money that is being allocated, we don't have enough money from the gas tax to cover it. And so we've been doing these continuing resolutions trying to figure out ways to come up with a way to pay it, pay for what we really need in terms of infrastructure. And what we got a couple weeks ago was the Senate Environmental and Public Works Committee released their kind of strategy and idea for what the next highway bill would look like, which is really the first one that we've seen for quite a while now. And the good news in what they're proposing for the next highway bill is keeping our funding levels the same for the next 2 years. It would only be a two-year bill. Traditionally, they're 5 or 6 year bills. So this is proposed to be a two-year bill that would keep all of our funding levels the same and also kind of try to, I can't remember the total number, I think there's over like 40 federal funding programs, and the idea would be to try to siphon those down to maybe 4 or 5 main silos of funding to make the funding more flexible through the state and through the MPO. Basically, though, with their plan, if they want to keep funding levels the same, we're seeing a $13 billion shortfall. They don't have the $13 billion to do what they say they want to do. And so the stalling point is, how do we fill that hole, the $13 billion? So at this point, I think the committee is still kind of scratching their head. The Republicans in the Senate are saying, hey, if you can't figure out a way, we're not going to pass this bill until we have some measures to fill the shortfall. But from everything we're hearing, this has been the most reasonable proposal that's been put forth so far that there is some bipartisan support for. So we think that this could start to be the framework of what that final bill is. The biggest news on the MPO front was that it would contain some MPO reform. The biggest thing, which doesn't affect us but affects a lot of MPOs, is that basically if you are an urban area under 200,000 people, you no longer have an MPO. And currently what it is an urban area of 50,000 people. So communities like Steubenville, Lima, which currently have an MPO structure like ours, would actually be disbanded. It's a cost savings measure, I think, for the most part, but it also strips away regions, a regional planning process from areas. I think like in the state like West Virginia, none of their cities are over a 200,000 urbanized area, so they actually would have no regional planning process in any community, even in the capital. So while it doesn't necessarily, you know, the big eight in Ohio, Youngstown, Canton, Akron, Cleveland, Dayton, those would all that be pretty much unaffected. But for the MPOs that are smaller, it could really play a large role in how the planning process goes on from there. So that's something we're kind of keeping an eye on just to see what happens. But it's sort of interesting. The other thing, just a note, ODOT did hire, if anyone saw it in the paper, they hired KPMG to do the study on the lease of the Ohio Turnpike. Looks like they're going to commence work in January with the goal of having recommendations on by July of 2012 to either lease, sell, or do something with the Turnpike in terms of making it a more viable asset in the state's eyes. We're not really clear on how the participation in that study is going to work at this point, but we're hoping that, you know, that they will have regional voices involved as they develop their recommendations. Also, some of you are familiar with the Northeast Ohio Sustainable Communities Consortium received $4.25 million to do a regional sustainability plan for the 12 counties in Northeast Ohio. Since our last meeting, they have a program office. It's actually right next door to AMATS in downtown Akron. They have they're fully staffed, and they are currently beginning to work on. They've developed five work streams that they're going to focus on to create this plan, and it's transportation, environment, economic development, housing, and quality-connected places. And right now they're just getting those underway, but it's something that I encourage everyone to kind of follow. Their website is neoscc.org, and they're currently kind of just getting underway. They've got about 2 years, I think, now, to put a plan together for the region, and you know, we're all kind of participating in that and helping them move along. But with that, if there are any other questions, I'd be happy to answer.
How does this structure coordinate or piece together with the regional prosperity initiatives?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're getting all these new structures and acronyms and everything else, and of course, how is this going to impact your job, what you all are doing? Because AMATS is gradually branching out from just transportation to sort of other quality of life issues,
mm-hmm.
and the urban sprawl issue, of course. So how do all these organizations play a part without colliding in purpose or effort or expense?
Yeah. Well, I think with the NEO-SCC, the positive thing is it was actually, the grant was applied for by the four MPOs in Northeast Ohio and the large cities in the region, Akron, Cleveland, Canton, and a few others. And so really the board of the NEO-SCC are people like Jason, Howard Mayer, NOACA, you know, Frank Jackson of Cleveland, things like that. So I think the goal of the NEO-SCC is really to perform the task of putting together this plan for all of us. And while they are an agency, you know, they've actually created an agency with a program manager and staff, they have a goal. And I think what they're supposed to do in the next 2 years is kind of help bring all of us together, because right now we don't have the capacity on our own to do a large-scale 12-county sustainability plan. Now, the RPI, I think, in a way, is slightly different, you know, because they're also kind of looking at one piece of this large pie, which I think is, for the most part, the largest for them is the tax sharing issue. And I think that element, they're involved in the Northeast Ohio Sustainable Communities Consortium. Mayor Mike Lyons kind of represents them at their board level. So they've got a foot in the door, but I think that's a fair question. And I think, you know, what happens with RPI as we move forward is sort of still kind of up in the air, and how they fit into this, you know, how they kind of fit into this new world. In a way, I think, you know, NEO-SCC kind of is going to do a lot of the stuff that some people that were involved in RPI wanted to do. But then there's another element of RPI that's not really spoken for in the NEO-SCC.
The other question, I guess, in my mind is, and with the RPI, is how much power do these new groups eventually envision having? I mean, are we talking regulatory power, taxation power, things of this nature? I mean, it's one thing to say they're a study group, but is there a possibility that they can morph into something more? I think as taxpayers, we have a right to know those things.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, I guess obviously nobody can predict the future.
They only have as much power as your representatives give them.
and I think, and I really, I don't think, you know, the intent and the people behind this, there's no, I don't think there's any intent to say combine the MPOs or, you know, there's nothing. I think one thing that they're trying to do is be as transparent as possible, create sort of an engagement plan, reach out to communities, reach out to citizens, and hopefully as that happens in the next 2 years, we'll, you know, learn a lot about what we can and can't do and where it goes from there. But, you know, I can understand. I think it's a valid concern. Things tend to snowball.
I don't want to smother the meeting here tonight, but, you know, there's things like corporate rating is a big issue. Mm-hmm. Things like the revenue sharing is big issues. Consolidation. I mean, we've got cities, we've got townships, we've got big cities, little cities. We've got sort of all kinds of levels of government activity within this 12-county region, and the question is eventually who's going to fall on the sword, because these real savings come from consolidation, from buying power, from acquisition, from use of capital.
Well, yeah, and then from laying off staff.
So,
I mean, that's a big
one,
too.
Who's going to disappear from the map
when
all this is said and done? So,
the reality is what we've seen is that with all the savings and consolidation is laying off staff. And, you know, so eventually, there's savings in purchasing power and things like that, but I think where a lot of these government agencies are getting weighed down is just isn't a lot of the workforce part of it. And okay. So I think there's some, you know, there are some issues there.
Okay. Does anybody else have any comments? Mr. Mangold.
Comments for the record. Yes. Sounds like I need to get a hold of my senators and maybe my representative. Clearly a bad idea to remove planning in the small urban areas. I can't see how that could be good. Understanding they're wanting to save some money, but taking a course in transportation systems planning, I see how important it is. The professor, Dr. Monroe, has done a really good job of showing all the mistakes we've made, particularly focused, obviously, in this country, on not doing good planning. So not doing it and not having that capacity available. Would you foresee mergers of MPO area or elimination?
Yeah, I think places like Newark, which has its own MPO, would be likely. But I mean, a place like Steubenville or, you know, Lima, which is really sort of
almost rural, but
they really are their own urban area. And I think there are a lot of legitimate concerns about that process. And I think what we're seeing is that this is still so early that there are some loopholes that say, hey, you know, if you can convince your governor that you're valuable, the governor can designate you as sort of this third-tier MPO and you can still perform X. You know, I think there's some, the code and the language needs to be worked out in how this would work. But I think the intent is to get rid of MPOs in less than smaller than, or in population smaller than 200,000.
As long as some of the planning still gets done, I could probably live with that. Yeah.
And I think that's where the state DOTs, some state DOTs are very active in planning, and some aren't. I think Ohio is kind of less so than some others, and so it would really affect us quite a bit because, you know, ODOT, as structured and has been for the last, for however many years, doesn't really do a lot of strategic planning. You know, they're very much a, you know, fix it first and engineering type
build.
So I think there are some concerns there, especially in Ohio.
Okay, does anybody else have anything? We'd like to move along with the agenda. We've got several items to talk about. You're not off the hook yet, Curtis.
Yeah.
We've got item four, staff presentations, will be the annual meeting report. And Curtis has got some further information on
that. And I promise this one won't be nearly as long-winded. If any of you were able to come to our annual meeting that we had in October, I know, Mike, you were there. Dave,
were you able to be there?
We did things a lot differently than what we've done in the past. And what we did in the past was kind of just have everybody come in, and we would present to them for, you know, over different issues for a number of hours, have lunch, and go home. What we decided this time was that we really wanted to sort of, you know, we thought we have all these bright people in the room. Let's actually try to have some discussions about issues. And so we used the Civic Commons to help facilitate our meeting, which, if you don't know, Civic Commons, created a website for sort of civic engagement where you can have discussions online with other interested people over an issue. And they have a lot of talented staff that we brought on to help facilitate. And what we did was we kind of posed the question is, you know, if AMETS, you know, AMETS cares about regionalism, regionalism is important. What do you think as, you know, mayors, engineers, planners in this region, what do you think AMETS can do to help kind of push a regional agenda where we can, you know, see some positive changes? And that, I thought those small groups kind of broke everybody up into four small rooms, and I think the discussion ended up being really positive. Welcome, Mr. Mackey. what we saw was kind of a theme of issues, and that's what we put on the television screen there, was what kind of came out of it. And we heard from a lot of people was, you know, streamlining is really important. How do we consolidate services, pool resources, increase our buying power? It's also interesting, well, how can we, you know, some of these things like a highway project take so long. How can we speed it up? You know, how can we look at potentially doing cross-boundary comprehensive planning? Then we talked about technology as a communication tool, stormwater management, innovative transportation infrastructure, which I think is kind of a very interesting topic. Not doing, you know, not kind of using the same pavements, the asphalts, all that sort of thing. And then kind of, I think, looking for best practices that we've already kind of carried out. And some of our questions that we asked our technical advisory committee, we're going to ask our policy committee, and we're going to ask and you tonight is, you know, these were sort of the issues that came to the top during the annual meeting, and which ones of these do we think are important? You know, you all being citizens, and participating in this process, which ones of these do you feel like are really important? Which would you like to see AMETS get more involved in? And basically, just have a discussion about it. So, you know, I thought overall the meeting was a success. We had over 150 people, and I thought it went really well. So any comments or questions, I'd be happy to answer, or any discussion.
Okay. Thank you, Curtis, for that report. If there are no questions, we'll go ahead to the next item, the selected policy committee agenda items. Now, there's a attachment 6A in your packets, which is resolution 2011-18, and this consists of the granting of the two $50,000 grants for planning studies, and you'll notice on the second page there are a summary of the applicants. There were two that were chosen that had a score of 51 on the point system, and there is actually a third project which scored 51 from the city of Green. So we'll look forward to hearing how that went and how the selection process made that final determination. We're going to call on Heather now for the details of that process.
Thank you. I'll try to be quick as well. Hopefully most of you are aware that this is our second round of funding, so we started gearing up for it again earlier this year to set up our second round. We made the applications available September 1st with an October 14th deadline. We received 11 applications by the deadline. And at that time, we decided to, very quickly, we came up with an idea to put these applications on the Civic Commons website to ask for some public feedback. So we did get, I think it was like 20 mm-hmm. votes. We had people could go on and comment on them as well as vote on them. So then our staff made a point to get together. We discussed the applications and scored them ourselves. Then we met with our Connecting Communities Planning Grant Task Force to discuss them as well. And as Mr. Ondecker mentioned, we had City of Ravenna, Boston Heights, and City of Green all in the top three. So it was kind of up to the task force to decide which two exactly should be funded. The staff recommended Boston Heights and Ravenna, but we did have some discussion about that. If you guys take a look at Attachment 6A, you can see the summaries of the two that we did recommend. The task force ultimately decided to go with the staff's recommendations. for Ravenna is looking at that.
I'll stop. The big point that ended up determining when we had the three that all scored the same was that, you know, as the staff and the task force looked at it, there was an issue, sort of, we discussed a lot about the capacity of these communities to do this and the question of, you know, if they didn't get this money, what was the likelihood that something, you know, would happen, or what would be the likelihood of, what scenario would be most likely? And so the staff felt and the task force felt that really, you know, Boston Heights being a community of having very few means, they just had this State Route 8 with the new interchange, Hines Hill, Boston Mills, all built up there. They have a closed, vacant golf course that is prime real estate for development, and they don't have a comprehensive plan, and they have no planning budget. You know, we felt like that was was something that if they didn't get a grant from us, you know, how were they going to kind of protect themselves and create a well-planned area around sort of this new development? And I think the same with Ravenna was kind of felt that, you know, they've got all this new investment going on with the Neo-UCOM, or I'm sorry, it's not Neo-UCOM anymore, Neo-Med, the Neo-Med campus. They have the hospital growing, and they've got this corridor that includes a downtown. And we felt like, you know, based on what their abilities were to fund these projects compared to Green's ability to kind of make sure that they can have good planning, as we felt that that was really important. And so the staff felt like recommending Boston Heights and Ravenna made the most sense. So, sorry, I just wanted to throw that detail.
I was going to mention that part to all of you. I think one of the good things... I don't have to summarize the projects. One of the other reasons we weren't going to, or we decided against giving the $50,000 to the city of Green, was that we felt that there was already quite a bit of development down there, and that some of the things that they were hoping to accomplish might not happen because of what all was already happening. So I actually spoke with someone at the city of Green about that. She completely understood that, and actually agreed that Boston Heights is probably in more need than the city of Green. So anyways, the task force then decided to recommend to the policy committee that we give our $50,000 grants to the city of Ravenna and the village of Boston Heights, and that is what is going to policy next week.
May I ask what departments those monies are allocated to from your organization?
It's where the money's coming from, you mean?
No. Like, for example, Ravenna. You're allocated $50,000.
We hire a consultant. So AMATS and the city of Ravenna get together and meet and interview different consultants who we will be requesting qualifications later on, probably early next year. So we meet with all of the consultants, and then we make a decision, the two organizations, the city of wherever and AMATS. And there's a contract written up between the consultant and AMATS. Yeah. So we pay directly to the consultant. We don't actually give the money to
the community. And then the consultant makes the recommendations to
the community. The community and us.
How to accomplish. Mm-hmm.
What they want to accomplish.
Yes. Yeah. We just completed our first set, or I guess we're pretty close to completing our first studies from last year. It was the City of Akron and Metro jointly received $50,000, as well as just completely blank, the Village of Richfield. So Richfield is nearing the end, and the City of Akron Metro study is we're basically waiting on the final report. So AMITS was involved the entire time, and that's how it will continue going forward.
Okay. Any other questions beside Mr. Fowler?
Yes.
Mr. Snopek?
Yes, sir. Thank you. Can I look at the scoring criteria? Can I get those?
Yes, it's in our application, actually, on the scoring criteria online.
You're right. That's right. I remember seeing that.
If you don't have what you need, you can email me and I can send you.
No, that's right. Thank you for reminding me.
You're welcome.
The higher number is, of course, what is desired to be selected.
Then. Yeah, and more points.
Mm-hmm. Is this is this 51 out of how many?
55.
Disappointed that that goes on the record. I'm disappointed that the rail plan fell that far down. I mean, I understand we need to do auto planning and such, but we need to prepare for the future, and the future may very well not be an auto-dominated transportation system.
Well, just as a personal comment, I think that a lot of public officials were, let's say, dampened by the governor's action to send back $400 million in direct aid for the 3C rail project. I think that sent a clear message to a lot of public officials in this state, a bad message, but nonetheless a clear message. Mm-hmm. So I think that may have a bearing on this and similar projects that come up for grants like this, unfortunately. Just one man's opinion. Anybody else have anything on this? Heather, are you pretty much complete on your report?
Yes.
Okay, thanks so much for that. If we don't have any other comments or questions, we'll move on to the next item on the agenda, which is the other policy committee agenda items. This is the famous yellow sheet that's included in your packets, as well as the individual summations that are attachments 6B, 6C, and 6D. Now, what we've done in the past, for those of you especially who haven't been to one of our meetings, we either discuss them individually or we can entertain motions to take an action on them as a whole, as a package. Tonight's projects or resolutions, potentially, that are presented to us, I think, are important enough that we would want to take them individually. And if you want to take just a moment to look these over, Resolution 2011-19, or Attachment 6B, is approving an amendment to the fiscal year 2012-2015 Transportation Improvement Program. Resolution 2011-20, Attachment 6C, is the projects to be funded under AMAT's resurfacing program and adding these projects to the TIP. And the last one is Resolution 2011-21, which is Attachment 6D, and that is the approving Amendment 5 to the TIP, which is a whole series of projects and revisions. So, again, if you would want to take a moment to look these over and be prepared to submit your questions or comments, we're going to go ahead and let Curtis begin by giving us some input on these individual topics.
Ready?
Yes. One thing we're going to do also is come back to these resolutions as a whole. 6A was the resolution concerning the Connecting Communities Planning Grant. So we will also entertain a motion to approve the task force recommendations to the policy committee. So we've got that housekeeping item to do as well. So we'll take these all in order once Curtis has commented on it.
I would say that Attachment 6B is fairly straightforward. This is an amendment to our current transportation improvement program to add, basically to add projects that was awarded through the Urban Transit Program of ODOT. Basically, it's kind of, what they have to do is amend the TIP. Metro is requesting that the project description of the TIP be switched from diesel buses to CNG buses, and the cost of the improvement is going to be almost $4 million. This is not like AMAT's money. This is from ODOT's program. And so I think what we see is that they're getting, and we look on the next page, 4 large buses, 16 small buses, funds for preventative maintenance, funds for a rail study, and an increase of funds for their current bus purchase. So they kind of piggybacked onto an old TIP entry and added quite a bit of stuff. But the staff does recommend approval of this resolution. Do we want to discuss them, or do you want me to kind of go through each one of them? Mike, do you have a preference?
Well, I think, why don't you go through them all,
okay,
and then we will find out what the committee's preferences are as far as the individual resolutions.
Okay. Yeah, Resolution 2011-20, I think this is probably the most important of them that we didn't discuss more specifically, but this is the resurfacing program. This is AMET's, our new round of funding, which is taking place at this meeting and then in January. And this has a lot to do with how we've talked about AMET's wanting to over-program. And so the first program that we looked at funding more projects on were the resurfacing program. And basically what the resurfacing program is a percentage of our STP funds, which are our most flexible funds. And these basically are funded to resurfacing projects that are less than $1 million. This is kind of your, you know, your standard, the road's bumpy, we need to repave it, and this is how we're going to do it. AMETS originally had allocated about 20% of STP towards this. They increased it to 35% because what we've seen is a huge demand for these projects. And basically, the way that these projects are ranked, if you turn the page, you see the list. There's 25 projects here. And it was basically plugged into a score sheet in terms of based on what their pavement condition rating was, their fair share, how much funding they've gotten from AMETS in the past. And then also safety, I think, was the other third main thing. And ranked on that, basically the subcommittee, the TIP subcommittee, decided that they would fund the first 25 projects, which you can see most of them are basically no more than $800,000, and a lot of them are less than that. But this is sort of, one, it's consistent with our plan because what AMATS has been really focused on has been sort of the fix-it-first priority of making sure that our roads stay, the roads we have stay in decent condition, and also it kind of fits in with the idea of over-programming, making sure that we put a lot of projects on the books that we think will get done. And these when these projects are approved, they actually will eat into quite a bit of our carryover balance in the future because they can be done very quickly. So that is that one. The last one is 2011-21. Basically, this is adding new projects to the TIP, and also I believe has one that's revising some scope. Most of these projects came way of discretionary funds, or also known as earmarks, that we have recently found out about and needed to add to our TIP that were not on there before. So that one's a pretty run-of-the-mill. A lot of it, I don't believe, has a lot of AMATS funding in it. But this is just amending the TIP to add these projects and to revise the scope. So that one's pretty straightforward.
Well, you just said a buzzword that I think has been in the news a lot, earmarks. Now, when you say earmarks, are these types of projects things that have been interjected into legislation at the federal level and are just now coming down the pipeline?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, and the thing is that these earmarks could, I actually just heard this at our last meeting, you know, that they could have potentially been added. Well, and I shouldn't say that. That's not completely fair because I'm looking through this now in more detail. The ones that say discretionary funds like the Evans Avenue, Gent Road, North Howard Street, those are all, yeah, from federal legislation where it's been put in. But some of these are from National Highway Safety Funds and from some ODOT programs too. So not all of them are discretionary, but we'll still get discretionary money that's been kind of stuck into all sorts of different bills, but I don't know the specific source for these.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Curtis. Mm-hmm. Well, we've got four resolutions to deal with. First of all, the subject on the agenda previously, the planning grants being awarded. Our resolution 2011-18, and we will entertain motions on those recommendations to the policy committee. Does anybody want to make a motion on 2011-18 about connecting communities planning grants? We'd like to hear one. Okay, we have a motion from Mr. Baker, that is Dustin Baker, and do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Mr. Fowler is the second. All right, any discussion on the motion? Okay, hearing none, all those in favor of approving resolution 2011-18, the Connecting Communities Planning Grant Awards, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
I will go on record as opposing that, yes.
Mr. Mangold opposes, so we have
for
one
previous
in
stated reasons.
We have one in opposition. All right, anything further on that? If not, the motion carries on voice vote. Thank you very much. Now, moving on to the other three resolutions, we have Resolution 2011-19, 2011-20, and 2011-21. We've talked about them individually, but as I mentioned before, the committee has in the past bundled resolutions at times, and we will entertain motions on these other three resolutions as you see fit.
I have a question about 6B. The rail study, are they looking for the commuter service or rapid service?
I'm pretty sure that the rail study
appears to be within the Valley Corridor.
Oh, yeah, this is the one that's looking at, kind of looking at the Merriman Valley up through the
north side?
Yeah, north side, and then I don't know if the study will take it all the way to Goodyear. I know that was originally Katandra's intention. But yeah, it would be looking at kind of doing a kind of a first start or a new start rail
line. For those of you who are not familiar with the way the tracks run in the area, the line cuts through the Merriman Valley, but at the southern end, it could potentially end right at the new Goodyear headquarters. The line runs literally right behind where they're putting up the steel for the new Goodyear headquarters building in East Akron. So I think the idea would be to study the feasibility. Of course, there are going to be, 1,200 to 1,400 Goodyear employees there?
Hopefully, yeah.
Well, the building's going up, so somebody's going in it. But
I think it could even be more than that.
But that would be a tremendous way to take cars off the street and provide a jump start for the whole concept of rail transit in our community. So it seems like a no-brainer if you look where the physical facilities run and what it would be at the end of it. So that certainly would, I think, be money well spent. So that's the answer to your question. Anybody else have anything? All right. Mr. Bixenstein, sorry.
Yep. I was just wondering, I guess I read that alternative analysis take like 10 years to complete? Considering the infrastructure, or at least part of it's already there, is there any chance it could take less?
No. No, I don't think it would take, I don't think this, for this study, I don't think it would take that long to complete. Because it's not a huge corridor, but so I would expect in the next 2 years that they would have some alternatives put together. That's optimistic.
I think what you'd have to look at is the improvements. It's a single line, rail line right now that sees very little, relatively little traffic in a sense that it's used by the Cahoga Valley Scenic Railway and it's used by the Wheeling and Lake Erie to service a couple of freight customers. So it's really underutilized at this point. But when you talk about putting passenger or commuter trains on there, you have to look at signaling and other things so that it could have, accommodate multiple schedules. So you're looking at those features and the environmental and all the other aspects. But luckily, the line is already there, and it's not an abandoned right away by any stretch. So that should shorten up a lot of the work necessary.
Yeah. And I think any time negotiating with any kind of private,
there's no right of way to buy. There's no eminent domain.
They already own it.
Mr. Mangold.
Yeah, the comment on that is kind of lose the thought of study there. Getting the people on rail and having a first start option could be a way to further develop that previously voted down link between Akron and Kent. And then maybe eventually look at building out to Northeast Ohio. So anything that's a first start like this is definitely going to be good. And then the alternative analysis process may go fairly quickly, but one of the more time-consuming things is the actual equipment specifications, the order, the construction of the equipment, and then, of course, the actual construction work, the CNS, communication and signals, as Chairman Ondecker pointed out. That's one of the more time-consuming and costly parts of any improvements.
Okay. Any further comments, questions? Do we have any motion? Yes, sir, Al.
Is Akron running natural gas buses now?
Yes. Yeah, Metro is, yeah. Metro RTA.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're getting more.
I'd hate to see him take a piece of equipment that would run out of gas mid-afternoon. Cleveland did that.
Yeah, they've. I think Metro's had a lot of success with their CNG buses. I know they have a fairly sizable fleet of them already.
Okay. Anybody else have anything for the consideration of the committee?
Do we have
any motions?
Motion to approve all three.
All three. We have a motion from Mr. Kalish.
I'll second that.
Mr. Mangold is the second to approve all three of these under one motion. So any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor of approving resolutions 2011-19, 2011-20, and 2011-21, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Thank you very much. That will end the discussion item or the agenda item on the policy committee items, and we'll move on to other business. Under item 7, we have the election of 2012 committee officers. One thing I would like to interject before we undertake that process is the acknowledgement that a message we received from Audrey Kessler. Audrey is the committee representative from the Portage County Commissioners, and she's served this committee with distinction. She was a multi-year vice chairperson. I have a message from her that she has been in ill health and is receiving treatments during the week, including a couple of evenings. That's precluded her ability to be here tonight. So I would like to acknowledge her service, and if you would, I think she'd very much appreciate hearing from you at this time of the year, the holiday season. I'm going to give you the email address that was on her message, and I think it would be nice if you would send her a message during the holidays, best wishes, and that your thoughts and prayers are with her. Her email address is AUDCK, small case, AUDCK, at neo.rr.com. Now I'll repeat it one more time. That's AUDCK. At neo.rr.com. I personally would appreciate anyone who would send a message to her and give her your thoughts and prayers. So thank you for that. We'll move along then to the election process. I have already expressed a willingness and a desire to serve as the chairperson again in 2012. And I would like to see someone step forward and be a vice chairperson. I think it's an important position. Back in January of this year, I was suddenly hospitalized and was unable to attend the January meeting. So luckily, Alex Kellerman, who was our brand new vice chair, stepped in and got a baptism under fire. I promise you that's not going to happen again, but nonetheless, I would appreciate having a vice chair to assist and occasionally run the meeting. I think it would be an advancement of our activities to have those take place. So anybody would like to put their name in the hat for vice chair? Or do you want to run against me for chairperson?
Did you formally note that Alex was... elected to...
Well, the reason Alex isn't here and the reason he's probably not going to be assuming his position again is the fact he was elected to public office in Hudson. So that's, he's getting his feet on the ground with that, and he wants to make sure he does a proper job there. So we can certainly commiserate with that.
So we'd like to see some names in the hat, and anybody like to step forward or voice their desire, now would be the time.
Or nominate someone else.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, point it to the person across from him. You know, that's perfect. Mr. Mangold.
I'd like to nominate our fine chairman again for the year of 2012.
Second.
Third.
Do we have a vice chair?
Well, if you so desire, I mean, I'll run alone, I guess. And just so for the record, if we have a motion and a second, who were the voices again? Who was the first one?
Dave.
Mr. Mangold is the motion, made the motion. Mr. Oh, Mr. Mackey, okay. Mr. Mackey is the second to make myself the chairperson in 2012. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor of my assuming the chairman's position in 2012, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
I'm in favor of myself too, I guess. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries, and I'll be glad to be your chairperson in 2012. Now, as far as the vice chair, do we have anybody want to volunteer to their own nomination or someone else's nomination?
I'm going to ask Mr. Baker, would you like to be vice chair?
I really have to rearrange my schedule to even come to the meetings.
Mr. Mackey.
No, because you can see my job sometimes keeps me from coming here, so I'll have to bow out.
Can you nominate someone that's not here and will elect
them? Well, I was going to say, you know, before the meeting, Audrey's always been our slam dunk, and I think that's going to be a little difficult right now. Mr. Mangold.
I've done the job before, but I'm still on a career entrepreneurship, and I need to progress in that. So if there's somebody that could back me up, if I had to drop out or unable to attend, and Mike's unable to attend, somebody to still run the meeting. I will be back on the road traveling, and I'm not yet sure of my schedule on Thursdays. I think I have an evening class, so that would knock me out of the first two meetings at least.
Well, I mean, one thing for sure, the staff can definitely run the meetings with I mean, no offense, Mike, but if we don't have a vice chair, the only thing it doesn't give us is any sort of, you know, contingency plan or backup plan. But if right now, if we're comfortable with just having a chair, and if something happens, you know, the staff can, you know, we can just have kind of an ad hoc. You know, I think we're comfortable with that as long as you guys, as the committee, are comfortable with that. So, if we're good with that, I guess we don't even really need a motion, but we can, you know, just kind of get up and walk away.
I mean, I can survive with a ceremonial type thing, and I can fulfill Mike's shoes if need be on that date. Hopefully, we collaborate, and I could try to arrange my schedule.
Well,
but if I'm unable to be here, I can't afford to. Literally coming to this event could cause me to miss the equivalent of what a normal person would have for an entire week's worth of work. Then in that case, somebody else would have to decide.
Okay. We appreciate that. We'll move forward with a chairperson, and I fully intend to be here. I certainly want to be here. I've been lucky enough. I've only missed that one meeting in 7 years, so.
That's true. Your attendance record.
We'll be glad to hear you, and we'll move on with that. Okay. As far as any other business, Mr. Mangold asked to have a few moments of the floor at the tail end of the meeting. He's got a topic that he'd like to address the committee, so I'll turn the floor over to him.
Maybe just real quick, 2.5. As I got to go into work tonight myself. I'm sure, who hasn't heard about oil or shale gas production? I've been attending both the environmentalist people's activities and the big Youngstown Expo. They had it over at the Covelli Center on Wednesday. They actually had a drill rig in the front parking lot of the Covelli Center. And, of course, the protesters showed up. That was always interesting. But one of them got in to ask the lawyer at the podium a question and started screaming. So I refer to her as the screamer. I do see their point. One of the things they bring up, and is a concern of mine, is on these residential-type or rural roads, they need to haul a lot of water and a lot of big equipment. And has AMATS taken any sort of look at this issue of the transportation needs of this probably emerging production of the Utica formation up north?
We're aware of it. We're concerned about it. I mean, has any traditional planning been done around it? No, because it's kind of really just picking up steam, it seems like. But I think there are a lot of concerns transportation-wise. I can't remember how many, but the amount of water that they ship out is incredible.
I mean, millions.
Yeah, millions.
Frack,
millions
of gallons. You get a lot of return water that then has to be handled environmentally safe.
Right.
Back to another well or to a temporary.
And I know that there's actually been some interest in reigniting more of a freight corridor between the Mahoning Valley or the Ravenna and or Cleveland to Pittsburgh route, with the idea that there might be some more use for freight rail coming through there.
I wasn't aware of that.
Because of the development that's all taking place in Portage and Stark. And so I think there's some interesting developments that people are starting to think about it. I think the challenge is just making sure we're ahead of the curve, because it's, you know, already, I don't know if you've all heard the ads. I've heard Chesapeake ads on the radio already. And there's a lot of concerns, I think, from both sides that hopefully will be kind of worked out. But I also know the NEO-SCC group is looking at it and is trying to incorporate it into what they're doing as well.
You become aware of anything, you guys have my email, please let me know. I'm getting heavily involved in this. As you know, I am a geologist, just non-practicing. I got distracted working in the
railroad. The collateral activity as a result of this is tremendous. I mean, the paper today had a story about how a steel company is... it's going to build a second mill in Youngstown. They're going to build a pipe threading plant in the Youngstown area. You know, and I'm sure these jobs are going to be such that people will be willing to drive miles to take advantage of these employment opportunities. You know, it's very easy to get to Youngstown from Akron, for instance, 40 miles one way. So you're not only going to see freight traffic, you're going to see a lot of commuter traffic. You're going to see a lot of economic activity, and I think the protesters, notwithstanding, they certainly have the right to voice the concerns. But by the time this all gets done, they'll be blaming ACME on the fracking process. So I think they need to take a long look at what actually this is going to do. On the other hand, it's similar to what used to be in Akron when you had all the rubber plants running. You had the black smoke and you had a bad smell, but by God, people were working. And based on what's happening to this region in the last decade or two, that could be a trade-off that people are willing to make. I don't know. Mr. Mackey.
That's a bad pun. Let me inject some. Ohio had one water processing plant set up by the Ohio EPA to handle its fracking water. The fluid that comes back out is contaminated with low-level radioactivity, residual salts from ancient seabeds, and whatever chemicals they have in there. And that's been shut down because you treat the water for the chemicals, and you might be able to desalinate. You can't get rid of the radioactivity. So the only treatment plant in Ohio is, and they were planning, the company that owns that treatment plant is planning on building five more plants. That's all on hold right now. So without the ability to get rid of the fluid, the drilling process has come to a screeching halt in Ohio. State of New York has gone and completely stopped everything because they've heard about the issues of contamination. And with all their upstate water sources feeding New York City, they don't want to have any issues with contaminated water, so they've just outlawed it. There is a new technology up in Canada where you actually take a propane gel, that's pretty cold, and instead of water, you inject it down to the shale formation and push it out with pressure, which does the same fracking. But now the gel doesn't evaporate. It turns back into a gas because it's warm. And you pull the gas back out. And you leave the radioactivity. You leave the salts. And you don't have any water or chemicals to treat. You recover the gas and re-gel it for the next well. So that is a promising technology that may be imported into the U.S. to overcome this contamination issue that they're having with the liquids right now. But that's all down the road in technology.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to be a hot topic. There's no doubt about that.
Still going to have a lot of trucks on the road and maybe some more rail cars. Our sales rep was there. We're looking at hauling raw steel products, pipe, sand, could even get into water in some instances, I suppose.
Okay. Does anybody else have anything for the open forum?
I don't mean to monopolize, but just one more. If anyone's interested on the subject that transportation is related to, because the amount of carbon that transportation spews into the atmosphere, there's been a whole series of lectures up at the Cleveland Museum of Natural History. I've attended some of them. One of them was on the energy from shale issue. There's been a whole series of other ones looking at items related to energy, which transportation does consume large quantities of energy. There's still a few remaining. Next week is Ohio's economy with offshore wind energy. That's on December 7th. I've got some copies here if anyone wants one. And then they're dealing with the ethical challenge regarding climate change. One of the professors from Case Western will be speaking on December 14th. One of the best ones, Dr. Thompson from Ohio State, who was originally scheduled on November 18th and rescheduled for January 6th, has had to cancel due to ill health. He's the professor that actually won me over. I was a fence sitter until I heard his presentation down at the John S. Knight Center here in Akron a couple of years ago. So I have some extras of these. All it costs you is the drive up there and the attendance if you're not already a member. I went ahead and become a member because I'm going to so many of them. That's the more economical thing to do. And they also have a display through December 31st only on climate change that I thought was very interesting. And you look at those charts and you know about the time that automobile transportation and rail and other modes and the whole industry started. You watch that graph of CO2 in the atmosphere. Just, I think as Dr. Thompson said, it basically goes off the scale, the amount that we've continued to put out in the atmosphere. So there's a lot of issues with that. So I'll have some of these available.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Mangold. We'll end the meeting the way we started. I would call your attention to the displays in the upper lobby if you didn't have a chance to see them. There was a very interesting display of photographs about how the Richard Howe House was moved and assembled and restored. Certainly a work of art and a testimony to a seven-year effort to get this project done. Otherwise, this could have been another old building that was torn down and lost forever. So if that's your interest, or even if you have a very casual interest, please take a look at that for your own information. Also, please enjoy a safe and happy holiday season. And remember, as I said, Ms. Kestner, I'm sure she'll be very happy to hear from as many of you as possible. Our next regular meeting is going to be Thursday, January 19th. At 7 o'clock, location yet to be determined, but we'll have ample notice on that out to everybody. And again, thank you for the new faces tonight. Thanks for taking the time to come out and join us. I would remind you that if you can make two meetings in a row, you can become a member of the CIC, and we would love to have additional people, as many as possible, join us at these meetings. There's a lot of money, as you can see, changing hands. And these projects that AMATS has to deal with, it's your money, and we'd like to see a lot more people become aware of how it's being spent. So again, my wishes for a happy holiday season, and I'll take motions for adjournment at this time. Mr. Mangold,
you want to have a second? Another cookie.
And do we have a second for adjournment?
I'll second.
Mr. Kish? Okay, we have a motion and a second for adjournment. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all is in favor of adjournment, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries, and we are adjourned.
Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, everyone.